23-0674, the people of the state of Illinois, Appalee versus Brandon Dunkelberger, appellant.
Thank you. Ms. Surya Narayanan, did I get anywhere close on that?
You are very close.
Would you like to begin?
Yes. Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Vaidehi Surya Narayanan, and I am an assistant appellate defender at the Office of the State Appellate Defender. I represent Mr. Brandon Dunkelberger, the defendant in this appeal. Today, I will ask this court to vacate Mr. Dunkelberger's guilty plea because at the time of the plea, the trial court did not admonish him to the elements of aggravated domestic battery as required under the United States Supreme Court decision in Stumpf, and therefore his plea was not knowingly and intelligently made. Moreover, there's no showing in the record that defense counsel cured this error by explaining the elements of aggravated domestic battery to Mr. Dunkelberger. Mr. Dunkelberger was charged with two counts, a class 2 felony aggravated domestic battery and a class 4 felony domestic battery. The lesser domestic battery charged alleged great bodily harm to the complainant and Mr. Dunkel's prior criminal history, whereas the higher class 2 felony aggravated domestic battery charge was based on strangulation. However, the charging instruments for both counts alleged that Mr. Dunkelberger strangled the complainant despite the strangulation only being an element to the higher class 2 felony. At his first appearance, Mr. Dunkelberger expressed some confusion over the charges, saying, "So I have a class 2 felony, they're not both class 4s." When the public defender was later appointed, a formal reading of the charges was waived. On December 21st, 2022, Mr. Dunkelberger entered a partially negotiated guilty plea to the higher offense of aggravated domestic battery. The circuit court admonished him, "It is my understanding you want to plead guilty to aggravated domestic battery. This is a class 2 felony." Mr. Dunkelberger later moved to withdraw his guilty plea, and at the hearing, defense counsel testified that Mr. Dunkelberger was charged with aggravated domestic battery, alleging strangulation, and stated, "Well, I know that the strangulation makes the offense a class 2 felony." Under these circumstances, Mr. Dunkelberger's plea was not knowingly and intelligently made. In Henderson, the Supreme Court affirmed a district court's finding in a habeas review that the state court erred in not informing the defendant of the elements of the offense of second-degree murder and that the defendant's plea was involuntary and had to be set aside. 27 years later, in Stumpf, the Supreme Court reiterated Henderson's ruling that a guilty plea is not knowingly and voluntarily made when a defendant is not informed by the trial court of the nature of the charges, including the elements of the offense. Here, at the time of the plea, Mr. Dunkelberger was not informed by the trial court of the elements of aggravated domestic battery. Therefore, under Stumpf, his plea was not knowingly and intelligently made. The Stumpf court has indicated that this error can be cured by some showing in the record that defense counsel explained the elements of the offense to Mr. Dunkelberger. That did not happen here. There is no evidence in the record that defense counsel explained the elements of aggravated domestic battery to Mr. Dunkelberger. I recognize that this-
May I just inquire, were the elements set forth in the factual basis?
Yes and no.
I mean, I know they weren't characterized as elements, but the defendant was aware that it was alleged that he had committed these quote-unquote elements, correct?
Yes, Your Honor. Strangulation was alleged in the factual basis. However, there is an issue where the charging instruments for both the Class 4 felony and the Class 2 felony alleged strangulation. So it wasn't clear that the strangulation was specifically attributed to the Class 2 offense.
But it was, because when the court and the defendant had a discussion about the class, it was made clear to him that he was pleading to a Class 2, not a Class 4.
Yes, Your Honor, it was clear that he was pleading to a class 2, but it was not clear that he was pleading to the class two because of the strangulation. It was never made clear that the strangulation was a part of the class two felony and not the class four felony. And that's the crux of the issue, is that the elements were not made clear to Mr. Dunkelberger. I recognize this court's previous decision in Stone that the state cites as its support in the argument that the obligation is best left for the defense counsel to explain the elements of the offense to the defendant. However, the Supreme Court was clear that the obligation to inform the defendant of the elements of the offense belongs to the trial court.
Tell us what specifically is wrong with Stone. What did they get wrong?
Your Honor, what Stone specifically was, what was wrong with Stone was that it did not recognize that if the defense counsel explains the elements to the defendant, there needs to be a showing in the record that defense counsel explained this to him. If there's no showing, then under Stumpf, we cannot presume that the elements of the offense were explained to the defendant. So there needs to be either the trial court admonishes the defendant, or there's a showing in the record specifically that the defense counsel explained the element to the defendant. And here the issue is Mr. Dunkelberger was not admonished to the elements by the trial court, and there's no showing in the record that defense counsel explained the elements of the offense to Mr. Dunkelberger.
So is your case, your argument, is it an ineffective assistance of counsel argument, or is it a 402 deficiency argument?
No, Your Honor, it is a 402. It is not an ineffective assistance of counsel argument. Our argument is that the trial court erred in not informing Mr. Dunkelberger the elements of the offense. Specifically regarding defense counsel, defense counsel could have cured this error by explaining the elements to Mr. Dunkelberger. However, ultimately, the obligation does belong to the trial court to admonish Mr. Dunkelberger.
Now I recognize that Jackson came before Stumpf, but we're required to follow Jackson as an appellate court, arguably. Does Jackson stand for the proposition that trial courts do not have an obligation to instruct as to the elements under 402?
Yes, Your Honor, Jackson has that proposition. However, my argument is that this appellate court must follow Stumpf, because Stumpf relies on Henderson, and Henderson essentially attributes this requirement to the Constitution. So because of that, this court should be following Stumpf's ruling and Henderson's as well, that a trial court is obligated to admonish the defendant to the elements of the offense. So at this point, you may all be thinking, why is this a problem? Why does this specifically matter in this case? Well, if the circuit court properly admonished Mr. Dunkelberger to the elements of aggravated domestic battery, it could have cured the flawed procedure that likely confused Mr. Dunkelberger. Mr. Dunkelberger expressed confusion on why he was charged with a class two felony and a class four felony rather than two class four felonies. A formal reading of the charges was waived, and at the hearing on the motion to withdraw the guilty plea, defense counsel testified, "Well, I know that the strangulation makes the offense a class two felony, yet the charging instrument alleges strangulation for both charges, the class two and the class four felony. And during the factual basis, the state alleges that Mr. Dunkelberger struck the complainant upon the head, despite not being an element of the class two aggravated domestic battery. Moreover, the mental state required for aggravated domestic battery, intentionally strangling the complainant, was not made clear during the factual basis. Mr. Dunkelberger is not a layperson. He is not familiar with the law as lawyers and judges. With the information provided to him, he did not understand that strangulation was only an element of the class two felony and not the class four. Moreover—
Can I ask a question? The strangulation could be part of the basis for both a class four or a class two. The state gets just to choose whether they want to use the act of strangulation to up the possible penalties and charge a class two versus a class four. But there's nothing, would you agree, there's nothing preventing the act of strangulation from being an element of both? And the state gets to choose, you know, what's this guy's criminal history? Let's just go with a class four. It's his first. Nah, this is the third one. This guy scares us. Let's go for everything. Let's charge the class two. But the act itself can be an element in both, which means there's no confusion.
Yes, Your Honor, it can be an element for both. However, in this case, the state was specifically charging the class four with aggravated, based on aggravated bodily injury and the defendant's prior history, but threw in the strangulation into the charging instrument, whereas the class two was charging the strangulation. So while in a different case, the state could have made that choice, here, they did not do that. However, the charging instruments did not make that clear. And Mr. Dunkelberger was never admonished to the elements of the offense. So he did not as well know the difference between the two charges and why the state was charging him with the class four and the class two. Along with that, there's nothing to rule out here in this case that this was a domestic battery case because the elements of the two charges were muddled in the proceedings and the circuit court did not admonish him to the elements of the defense. Mr. Dunkelberger could not even explore his options or be aware of the possibility that this was just a domestic battery case. And to circle back to Stumpf, a bright line rule, such as the one that the Supreme Court reiterated in Stumpf, is truly for the benefit of the courts and efficient administration of justice. By requiring the trial courts to admonish the criminal defendants to the elements of the offense at the time of the plea, the reviewing courts can avoid the burden of having to scour the record to determine what the defendant knew at the time of the plea. But here, because the circuit court failed to admonish Mr. Dunkelberger to the elements of aggravated domestic battery, there's no showing in the record that defense counsel cured this, and there's no showing in the record that defense counsel cured this error by telling Mr. Dunkelberger the elements of the offense. Mr. Dunkelberger's plea was not knowingly and intelligently made. I recognize that this issue was not raised in the trial court proceedings below. However, as this is an error that was so serious that it affected the fairness of the proceedings and challenged the integrity of the judicial process, it should be addressed under plain error review. If your honors have no questions, Mr. Dunkelberger respectfully asks this court to vacate his guilty plea.
Are there any further questions at this time? No. Thank you. Mr. Trejo, did I get that right?
You did. May it please the court, counsel, Adam Trejo on behalf of the people of the state of Illinois. I've never done this before, but the state doesn't have anything additional to add other than what was already analyzed within its brief, and it stands by its brief. Does this court have any questions regarding its argument?
Mr. Trejo,
yes.
Isn't there an argument that Stone is wrongly decided? I mean, Jackson came before Stumpf. Stone says what it says, but it seems to ignore the requirement that the record somehow demonstrate that the defendant was informed about the elements, either from counsel or the court.
Well, it is the state's position.
Stone does not seem so correct to me.
No, it's the state's position that Stone and Stumpf are harmonious and they're not in contradiction at all, because Stone didn't disagree with Stumpf's analysis that we can look to the record in specifically in regards to what the defendant's attorney told him regarding the elements of the offense.
So let's look to the record. Show me where there's any suggestion anywhere in this record that the defendant was informed of the elements by his counsel.
There is none. However, this is the state's reading of Stumpf. Stumpf is basically giving defendants the ability to challenge their plea through Strickland, through an ineffective assistance of counsel claim. The state is not disagreeing with that. I think the analysis would be much different if the defendant attacked his guilty plea under Strickland, but as defendant has acknowledged in their opening arguments, they didn't raise that. And the state does point to it in its brief. We'd be in a totally different realm. However, the defendant is challenging it through the trial court's obligations and under Rule 402. Here, the trial court exactly followed what Rule 402 mandated. Again, the defendant challenged the wrong avenue using Stumpf. You don't use Stumpf and state that Rule 402 requires more than what it is already written. Stumpf is giving defendants the ability to challenge these guilty pleas via Strickland. That is the state's position. And unfortunately, the defendant didn't do that here. That is not the issue presented here.
Is there is there not a fair argument that when 402 says inform the defendant of the nature of the charge, that after Stumpf must mean more than the name of the charge you're pleading guilty to is aggravated domestic battery?
That's not what this court stated. Stumpf was published when this court came out with Stone, when it explicitly stated Rule 402 does not require the trial court to admonish the defendant of the elements of the offense. The lower court is bound.
You win under Stone. I'm just wondering if Stone is correct.
Yes, absolutely. Again, the lower court is bound to follow the rule and it does not have the power to modify it. But even so, as this court was questioning the defendant, the factual basis for the plea did give the defendant notice to what he was pleading guilty to. He was specifically informed by the trial court that he was pleading guilty to a class two felony, the offense that he committed was against a family or household member, specifically his paramour, who he had a child with. The factual basis also included the fact that the class two included the fact that you woke up your paramour and that you struck her on the head before being held down and you grabbed her by the throat. The factual basis also stated that defendant choked her to the point where she had difficulty breathing. These are the facts that constituted the element of the offense. He was put on notice to what he was pleading guilty to. There was no ambiguity, either the type of class or the acts that constituted the offense. He was put on notice. So defendant's argument falls on that basis.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Trejo?
I do not either. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Trejo.
Thank you.
Ms. Surya Narayanan, do you have any rebuttal?
Yes, I do, Your Honor. So, Justice Brennan, you asked the state if Stone was wrongly decided. And you noted that the elements of the offense, the nature of the offense includes the elements of the offense. And you are correct on that. In Stumpf, the court clearly stated that the nature of the offense includes the elements of the offense. So Mr. Trejo's argument that we would be changing Rule 402 by requiring the trial court to admonish the defendant to the elements of the offense is incorrect because the elements of the offense is included in the nature of the offense, which is what Rule 402 requires. And moving to the factual basis that the state discusses, the factual basis is quite muddled in this case. As the state noted, the factual basis discusses the strangulation, the striking upon the head. However, the striking upon the complainant's head was not an element of the class two felony. So it is unclear to Mr. Dunkelberger that he is pleading to the class two offense because of specifically the strangulation and that he's not this is the reason why he's not pleading to the lesser class four offense. Moreover, the class two offense alleges intentionally strangling the complainant, and there's no evidence in the record that indicates that Mr. Dunkelberger intentionally strangled the complainant. Even though the state alleges the strangulation, it's not clear that it was intentionally done. Because of this,
is intent really an element?
Yes, Your Honor, it is an element, and it is important that all the elements are met in this case and that it's clear to the defendant what the elements are and that he is aware of specifically what he's pleading to. So he has an understanding of why he's pleading to the class two felony versus the class four, or why he decides to plead rather than go to trial. If there are no other questions, I would just like to reiterate that Mr. Dunkelberger requests that this court vacate his guilty plea.
Are there any other questions?
I don't have any more.
Not at this time, thank you.
So we thank you both for your arguments this afternoon. We'll take the matter under advisement and we'll issue a written decision as quickly as possible. The court will now stand in recess until 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.